Welcome back to the Wild Slide News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's amazing how life endures, how the myriad ways we have all tried to survive tell us of the greatness of this mystery of life. We now adventure to my old stomping grounds in the hills outside Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the wondrous road to the secret birthplace of the atomic bomb. Such irony. It's Bandelier National Monument. My spirit sings when I travel back up the twisting road into the foothills of the great Hamas Mountains.
I'm delighted to welcome to the Wild Side News Darlene Kuntz, who is the superintendent at Bandelier National Monument in New Mexico. One of my favorite places. Darlene, I hear you're having a bit of a mid-March snowstorm.
Oh, we sure are. It started last night, and it's supposed to snow all day today, and the park's closed today. But the moisture's good for us up here. We really needed it, and so no one's complaining.
Bandelier is an amazing place. If you haven't visited there, I highly recommend it because it's exciting. There's lots to see and do. So, Darlene, give us a perspective of what a park visitor is going to experience when they come to Bandelier.
Bandelier is about 34,000 acres, 23,000 designated wilderness. We have an extraordinary amount of prehistoric and historic ruins. It's got about 3,000 archaeological sites surveyed within the park itself. We've got another about 1,000 cavates along the walls. It's a tough material. It's an ash material, and it's very soft, so it allowed the Pueblo people to carve out caves. And when you come to the park, you're going to get a chance to see some of these archaeological sites, some of these cavates. Even along the main trail, you'll get an opportunity to climb some of the replica ladders that they used historically. You'll be able to see some of the larger ruins like Chione, that at one time housed about 100 people. You'll be able to see some of the artwork on the walls. And it'll just take you back kind of in time. Also to the exhibits and sometimes, you know, of cultural demonstrations in the summertime. So you can see the current local Pueblos and how they relate and how that lifestyle continues to exist.
Why did these folks come to this canyon? And then also what I'm sure everybody wants to know is why did they build the homes in the cliffs?
Friolis Canyon is the main canyon in the park. What we've got down there is access to water. You have Friolis Creek. It was a good climate. You had, like I said, you had that soft tuff. It's an ash that about a million years ago had volcanic eruptions and kind of created the canyons and Bandelier. And it was a tough, soft material, so people could build their cavates out of it. Also, too, they could carve their stones to build their pueblos. And it was a good site, Friolis Canyon. They grew beans and corn, small mammals to feed on. And it was just it was a good place to raise their families, just like you and I, grow their crops, do a little bit of hunting. Climate was good. They had access to water. And so they spent some time in the area.
How are they connected with the cultures around them, their neighbors?
Kind of this whole southwest area, you know, there's a variety of Pueblos and Indian tribes. So there was a multicultural, just a combination of Pueblos and Indians all throughout the area. And they traded. A lot of times we'll find, like, points and different things, different tools and stones that they used for carving and matates for corn. And what we'll find is that stone or that material was never found in Bandelier, but it was found like maybe, 50 to 100 miles from here in some sort of quarry. That they even had quarries that they would trade a lot of this material, because, it was a daily thing, their lives, to use all these tools. And so you can kind of see that there was an integrated culture throughout the area.
They were very complex people, and as you say, they did have a lot of interaction. How did they relate with the Chaco culture? Because I believe that there's a relationship.
From what I understand, there was a relationship. The Chaco culture, a little bit of a different time frame than the lower down here. There's still a lot of unknowns. One of my favorite things is to go out and hike with the archaeologists. And, I love to ask questions and ask answers. And they're really good about saying, they just don't know. We know they interacted. I'm not sure we fully understand to what depth. And then, the people came and left. And a lot of times there's no indications for us at this time as to why. We know some, but there's still so much more that we don't know.
Do you know why they left? I mean, has there been some evidence perhaps that there was a drought or some sort of illness or something else?
It's funny because I ask those same questions to the archaeologists, and they say, yep, you're right. It could have been any one of those things. I don't say that lightly because I think we all want those answers, and we don't have any kind of what we would consider today positive proof. But it could have been any one of those things. They didn't write anything down, and everything was taught or shared through stories. And, you know, sometimes even with the current Pueblos and the Pueblo people, those are very sacred stories, and so they're not always comfortable, and we totally understand that, of sharing that. So it's kind of a mystery, and it keeps us all wondering.
When a person visits Bandelier, they're going to kind of have three possible experiences. One is the canyon experience, one is the cliff dwellings, and then also there is, for those who can make it to the top of the mesa experience. Let's start with the canyon. What will people see in that canyon? Because there is a remnant of that culture there.
If you come into Shoney, one of the first things you're going to do is you're going to come down into the canyon, and you're going to come into the area, you'll see all these historic stone structures. And that was built in the CCC era. We've got 33 historic structures that they came down and built at a road that you would drive down. It's a three-mile road that takes you down into the canyon. And first thing you'll do is you'll go into the visitor center, and that's a CCC historic structure. And the CCC came in 1933 and stayed and built all these buildings in the road, and they left about 42 or so. So the first thing you'll do is you'll see those extraordinary structures. And then as you walk out the back of the visitor center, you'll get on what we call the canyon trails. And the first stop that you'll come to is Chione. And that's one of the larger Pueblo sites that we have in the park. You'll see it. It's kind of in a circular thing. And as you climb, as you go through the trail through the middle of the Pueblo site, it'll wind you back up towards the Cavites. And as you look back down on Chione, you'll see that it was a circular Pueblo site with a huge courtyard center area where they would, you know, children would play and they'd have their fires. At one point, we believe it housed about 100 people. It was up to 2 to 3 stories high. And then as you follow that around, you'll see several kivas. There's a big kiva right outside Chione, and then there's several smaller kivas within the site itself.
Of course, the kivas are the underground ceremonial spaces.
Correct. Correct, and you'll have a good example. There's one excavated, and then you'll see a couple that haven't been excavated, but you can kind of see the indentations into the earth itself. And there's still some mysteries about the kivas, too, in the sense that in one kiva you'll see 3 square holes in the floor, you know, probably about 6 inches deep. And still today we wonder what those holes were. Were they foot drums? Were they? Our guess is still, you know, we can only imagine. And then as you continue on up the trail, you'll go up towards the Cavites, towards the caves on the side of the cliffs there. And the trail winds along the cliff there, and you'll have an opportunity to climb in some of these Cavites and see the historical soot on the roofs where they had their fires. And they plastered the side of the walls to keep the from crumbling and dust and dirt. And on that plaster, they would paint their drawings. Like, you'll see serpents, and you'll see figureheads and animal heads. And then as you go along the trail, you'll look up on the cliffs, and you'll see a lot of petroglyphs along the cliffs. And then as you walk down, you'll see Longhouse, which is a long Pueblo site, and Tallis House, which is a replica of a Pueblo house. And then you'll continue down in there till Friola's Canyon, and if you can make it, at the end of the trail, we've got about a 140-foot vertical climb up to what we call Alcove Cave. It's just this huge, huge cave where people lived. You know, dug out just like the Cavites on the hill. And if you're brave enough, you can climb up the ladders, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, those ladders, for those who are willing and don't have a fear of heights or something like that, you get a chance to hop onto these ladders. They're wonderful wooden remnants, kind of an old
right.
form of ladder, and climb to the top. When you get to the top, what's the experience there?
I think the best experience there is we have a replica kiva that you can climb down in. And can guide it, kind of get a feel that people would go down there and have share stories and have ceremonies. And at that time period, it was mostly the males that used the kivas. And so you can climb down in and spend a few minutes and feel how cool it is that, you know, in the heat of the summer and how warm it is in the wintertime. And the Alcove Cave, it's just a wonderful place just to sit. You can look up and down the canyon. You can look down and on the other Pueblo sites. And you can just let your imagination go wild about what life was like, you know, around 1200 or 1300.
Yeah, that's very romantic. What's the best season to visit?
Spring, summer, and fall. Probably July and August when the monsoons come in. So unless you know, which is kind of nice because it just, you know, it's real hot during the day and then the rains come in and it kind of cools it off and they come through pretty fast. So even that time of year is not bad. You just get a different experience. But I'd say spring and fall.
What would be some of the closest landmark towns and cities that people might be familiar with?
you'd come out of Santa Fe and you'd head north, and then you could come through either White Rock or Los Alamos, and then you would come into the park on Highway 4.
Which is an extraordinarily beautiful drive.
It is. It's a state scenic byway, and it's, if you come up Highway 4 through White Rock, and you just really get a feel for the area. All the cliffs that you look along the walls, once you get out of Santa Fe and you start coming up the mountains, you can see these caves, and you can see some of the petroglyphs, and you can see the soot if you look in the caves, and you know that people lived all along in this area.
Now, you've got some interesting new developments with Bandelier. Number one, you're looking at your 90th anniversary.
Yep, in February of 1916, the park was established. It was run by the Forest Service for a number of years, roughly till around, I want to say, early 1930s, and then the Park Service took it over at that time. Next year, we're 90 years old, and in 2016, we'll be 100 years old, the same centennial of the National Park Service. So next year, what we've got planned is we've got events planned, like, on a monthly basis, and everything will be on the website, and we're going to do stuff like, you know, we're working now with maybe even establishing a limited edition pendulum blanket or some sort for Bandelier. And just all sorts of things that people can come and kind of get a, you know, just have a good experience. That's what it's all about.
One of the things that we both share a passion for, and that is the artifacts that you'll find. And, of course, all of the national parks do have these extraordinary collections that generally aren't open to the public because they're very valuable and historic and irreplaceable. But you're doing something very fascinating, and I'm so thrilled to hear about this, and that is an online experience for people to be able to become familiar with the extraordinary collections at Bandelier.
What we've done is we just unveiled last week, we have a program, it's kind of a national program for the Park Service. We're trying to get out to the parks and come with, you know, really highly qualified photographers and, you know, some help us with some script writing and some developing a whole website that is really just focused on the collections of Bandelier. So what they've done, we've got about 150 items on the website, prehistoric and historic and modern objects that we have in our collection, like you said, that we're unable to share with the public on a regular basis. We've got Pablito Velarde paintings, we've got Hummer paintings, we've got pots, we've just got a whole gamut of things. There's you can look through the pictures, you can get on and interact with some music and stories. There's lessons planned that if you're a teacher that you can pull off and teach about museum collections and within your classroom. And so what it's done is it's just given the public who really, need to see this stuff an opportunity to do that. So if you're anyone from just, a visitor that wants to look to someone that wants to study, I think the site will be really good.
The site is up now, and how can people find that site?
The easiest site is to go on nps.gov, go to the National Park Service, pick up Bandelier, and right on there you'll see one of the biggest icons for the museum collection. You can hit on that, and it'll take you right in there.
That's exciting. So that's nps.gov, and then when you go there, you'll be able to choose from the park list and go to Bandelier.
Yes.
Is there camping at the park?
We've got two campgrounds. We've got a group campground, and then we've got more of a family campground. We've got 70 miles of backcountry trails, and you can backcountry camp. You need a permit, we just put you in zones so we can spread you out. But once you get in the backcountry, that is what, or just off on some of our trails outside of the canyon, that is what I think is so exciting, too, because you walk along and there's just all these Pueblo sites, archaeological sites out there. You know, of course, we ask people not to take anything or walk on them, but it's just, you know, it's just an extraordinary thing to walk among this, and you'll see all sorts of sizes and shapes of sites, and still, it's just amazing. Last fall, just a visitor was hiking in an area of the park and found a whole bean pot, and we thank him because he called the park, and we've made it part of the collection, and learning more about it, we can share it with folks. So I really want to encourage people to visit the canyon, but not just that, is to pick up a trail map and try to get off the beaten path.
That experience in that part of New Mexico would be wonderful. The silence that you experience in that place is unique, and the skies are the bluest of any place in North America.
And you'll have great night skies, too.
That's
a lot
true.
Of in the park and
yeah, you can see 100 bazillion stars every
right.
single night.
Right.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous place.
I've worked a lot of places. It's my ninth move with the Park Service, and And, you know, I've enjoyed every one of them tremendously, but something about Bandelier and it's just its culture and its history and all the artifacts and the sites and stuff, it kind of humbles you when you're out there. And your imagination just seems to go crazy.
My experience has been the sense that this was a gentle people.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it feels to me.
Mm-hmm.
People who sort of had a life that they had control of, they understood it. It's one of my favorite places, what can I say? I love Bandelier.
I think you just did a great job of describing it.
Well, listen, I want to thank Darlene Kuntz, the superintendent at Bandelier, for joining us on the Wild Side News. I encourage everybody to get a chance to visit, if not Bandelier, then one of the Pueblo parks, because the experiences there are quite unique, and there's a phenomenal story of early American, Native American history that we need to know a lot more about because it's part of American history as well. Thanks, Darlene, for being on the Wild Side News.
Hey, thanks, Sydney.
It's all a part of history, and we make our own historic mark here on the Wild Side News as we finish our first year and head on out to the unknown. What will this next year bring? We'll just have to wait till next time to find out. Until then, this is Sydney Wildsmith saying adios. Join me next week as the voice of the earth continues, or anytime on our archives, always on the Wild Side News.